you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Someone is trying to teach me a lesson in futility. Why am I the only one who isn't killed?
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, sir, you.
Plastics.
I'm going to get your money for you. But if you don't get the President of the United States on that phone, you know what's going to happen to you?
What?
You're going to have to answer to the Coca-Cola company.
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale. It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It is my pleasure to have Ryan Dawson back on the show. Ryan runs the Anti-Neocon Report, ANC.com, right?
Yeah, ANCReport.com.
Oh, sorry, ANCReport.com. And today we're going to talk about a recent documentary he has produced, Trump's Zionist Ball and Chain, sort of detailing the Zionist criminal connection to the current Trump administration and its influence throughout, because modern history here in the United States, corruption, assassinations, illegal wars and such. So, Ryan, how do you want to get in this? The video is full of information. You make all these connections that explain a lot of, very important historical events.
It's amazing that the Democrats didn't dig up any of this information, isn't it?
Yes, it was only Russia, right?
Yeah,
Russia.
They're talking about. There's about as much evidence for Russian hackers as there was for weapons of mass destruction. But you know, the Democrats can't really criticize Trump or Kushner or any of them for the things I got on this case about, because they're all guilty of the same things. So although this movie focuses on Donald Trump and his associates and their mafia connections and all their criminal activity, I could have made one twice as long about Hillary Clinton.
Yes, and you do mention that is in the video that it is indeed a bipartisan deal going on, because the Clinton connection to these things. So it's just a question of what empty suit happens to occupy the White House.
Yeah, she's not the president, so I will be. Well, I'm making this Iran-Contra series, and the Clintons are going to be all in that anyway. So,
yeah, that kind of clarifies or I think portrays in stark relief the connection, the sort of bipartisan connection of sort of this criminal cabal that runs the federal government intelligence agencies. Because with that, you get the Clinton-Bush partnership.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You do, and you know, even with Kushner, Charles Kushner was a heavy donor to both Clintons, and a lot of the Port Authority figures were deep in with the Clintons.
And just a clarification: Charles Kushner is the father.
What
of,
that means, I guess, but yeah.
Charles
right,
Kushner.
So yeah, so
he's the father
Charles
of Jared
Kushner. Charles
Kushner
is the felon father of Jared Kushner, who's Trump's son-in-law. Jared married Ivanka Trump, Donald Trump's daughter, and he now has a senior position in the White House. He just negotiated the $110 billion deal with Saudi Arabia. This week he met with Benjamin Netanyahu. It's not his first time meeting him. Benjamin Netanyahu's actually slept in Jared's bed. When he comes over to the United States, he stays with the Kushners. That's how tight their family is. And but Charles is a very interesting guy. Got out of jail in 2006. The stuff he did is worthy of a Trailer Park Boys episode.
Yeah, the idea of hiring prostitutes to blackmail your brother-in-law. It's rather, right?
Is that, yeah, that was did? Like one of the things he did. Sure, I mean. But, you know, in that story where he went after his sister's husband, when he got the prostitutes, he spent $37,000 on this ordeal, by the way. The middlemen he tried to use to procure the hookers were the chief of police and another policeman, the O'Toole brothers. Why would you go to the chief of police and ask them to find you a hooker so that you could blackmail an employee? He wasn't worried about it at all. That shows you how deeply corrupt New Jersey is when a real estate mogul billionaire goes to the chief of police and says, you know, find me a high-end hooker. And then they didn't find the right girl, I guess. So Kushner got her himself, and they went to a two-star motel. The Red Bull Inn, and she videotaped the whole thing, and Kushner actually sent the tape to his sister, and she didn't care. She went forward with it anyway. That all that did was add witness tampering to the list of illegal activities he was doing anyway. So what he'd been doing is he had already been blackmailing the governor of New Jersey, which is a very important position for real estate tycoons, because the governor of New Jersey is who appoints the chairman of the Port Authority. And the Port Authority has authority over all this infrastructure for New York and New Jersey. They control all the ports, seaports, airports, etc. They also control a lot of other properties. They've got their own police. So if you can police everything and own your own port, it's pretty easy to bring in heroin from Afghanistan, for example, or whatever. So Kushner was aiming to bribe the governor, and that was Governor McGreevy at the time, Jim McGreevy, who was a closet homosexual. He's out of the closet now, but he met his Israeli boyfriend in Israel. His name was Golan Sapel. And Kushner's who sponsored his visa to come to the United States. Kushner already knew Golan, set him and McGreevy up together, knew about their relationship, clearly was blackmailing the governor, and the governor did indeed appoint Kushner to become chairman of the Port Authority. But he didn't really get to exercise that power, because at the same time that that was going on, Kushner was also in a fight with his older brother, because what Kushner had been doing for several different governors in a row was he would donate to their campaigns, but he did it in a rather clever yet rather common way. What he'd do is each time he wanted to send a boatload of money, he'd set up a new company with a new name and have that donate. And he was setting up companies. They're not even real companies. They're just like an office wherever. But he's setting up these front companies. And he put them in his partner's names without telling them. And that way he was able to donate a lot more money than what campaign finance regulations allow. His older brother felt like he should have gotten more money out of it. So they were fighting with each other. And the sister was on Charles's side until Charles demoted her husband because he was messing up at work. So she turned on him. So that's why he blackmailed her husband and her, or tried to. And so in doing so, in his fight with his brother Murray, his brother's name, it was revealed just how much he had been doing in this gambit that I just explained. And so he got, on top of that, tax evasion charges and witness tampering and also illegal financing for political campaigns. And then the Governor McGreevy scandal comes out like 2 weeks later, since, hey, Kushner's going to jail, you're coming with me kind of thing. And he used Golan to strong arm McGreevy. McGreevy ended up having to resign. But he walked away like a boss because he just said, oh, I'm a gay American, and gave a heart-wrenching speech. But they ignored the fact that he gave his boyfriend a $150,000 job, a foreign national in charge of New Jersey security, which had access to nuclear sites, and the fact that he was having an affair with a man in his wife's bed while his wife was in labor with their child in the hospital. He's doing Jaeger shots and fooling around with his secret partner that he picked up in Israel in her bed, in her house. And that guy was the biggest pay-to-play governor since the Clintons.
Yeah, I mean, that's bad. I mean, you spell that out in the film, just how that pay-to-play is how politics is run. And, well, in the state of New Jersey, and of course, other places as well, even the federal government, but New Jersey is particularly is a particularly good example of such corruption.
They're really susceptible in New Jersey because of the way New Jersey is organized. It has so many school districts, so many superintendents, so many one of everything and every little piece of dirt, and you know, it's just awarded by government basically, and
it's a gravy train for corruption.
It's a gravy train, and there's this group there called the Holocaust Builders. It, you know, the Zuckermans, the Wilfs, the Kushners, I list them all in the film, but they are real estate tycoons, and they essentially take advantage of this government system, so you know, so that they have government support against their competitors, and they buy up very lucrative real estate in New Jersey and New York and make a ton of money off of it. And they use those profits to continue bribing the governors, who get them positions on the Port Authority, which allows them another regional oligopoly over real estate some more. And the cycle just keeps repeating itself. When you look at the transportation section of the Port Authority, there's not one person in there that's ever done anything with transportation. They're all bankers and real estate people. Like,
yeah.
And that was Corzine did that. McGreevy did that. Chris Christie did it. All of them. They're all guilty. All parties, all people. Torricelli did it. Like, so he was a senator. But
yeah, and there's a disproportionate representation among, I guess you could describe them as Zionist Jewish agents, right, as you spell out in the video, in the film.
Yeah, well, the former president of AIPAC has been on the Port Authority for over a decade and a half now, and this guy Weinstein he's no longer AIPAC's president because he was caught on a hot mic basically bragging about the billions of dollars they manipulate from people. And so what happens if you get fired from AIPAC? You go work on the Port Authority. Like, they'll still have you. It doesn't matter. And when Trump's daughter married Charles Kushner's daughter, it was basically saying, all right, the premier, you know, the top two, I'd say, New York real estate mogul, which is Donald Trump, and the top New Jersey real estate mogul just married together, literally, and both brought all their mob ties with them, and there were a lot of those. It's kind of hard not to do business with the mob in New York, though.
Yeah, because of the unions and the construction companies.
Yeah, especially in real estate, exactly, yeah. Because that's their classic revenue streams are what? You know, narcotics and prostitution and gambling, fine, everybody knows that. But the big thing has, I mean, since the golden days, you know, with Hoffa and the Chicago outfit and Lucchese and those guys running the garment district, it's always been the unions, you know, controlling trucking, controlling cutters, controlling parts of the union. And the big thing in development, of course, is, for example, like ready mix concrete or windows or something like that.
Yeah.
Which, you know, fat Tony Salerno ran the mixed concrete industry and he ran the unions. So he could keep the unions at bay and make sure that things were delivered on time without disruptions. if you were willing to do business.
And cement Trump
certainly was.
Cement is a great way to dispose of bodies.
Well, Chicago knows that, and the Crown family, they did the same thing. They owned a lot of these construction material type of businesses, and it's all mafia. It's all mafia stuff. And it's interesting because these families also tie together when Henry Crown's offspring married the Sheen family, who, you know, Julius Meyer Sheen was a hotel guy too. His son worked with Senator McCarthy and palled around with Roy Cohn, who becomes Trump's lawyer, who is also at first a closet homosexual, and he's open now. He's passed away, so it doesn't matter. But it matters in the 60s and 70s and even 80s, because if you're homosexual at that time, it was really, really taboo, a lot more than now, and not something you want everyone to know. And those kind of secrets give way to manipulation and blackmail, just like Hoover, right?
Yeah, it is interesting that Roy Cohn, he was sort of the king of compromise, sexual compromise, having information on people. And then you have, of course, you have Charles Kushner, who's apparently resorting to similar tactics. He just ran into a couple of people who just didn't care.
You know, yeah, it is because what Kushner did with these honey traps, like to his brother-in-law, and he also tried to honey trap his CPA, one of them, and his other CPA, Marcy Plotka, got in her own scandal, but I don't want to get off track onto that mess yet. But you know, Roy's everyone knows it was his boyfriend. You know, his boyfriend's father actually ran the hotels that Mickey Cohen was running gambling operations out of, and it's where Robert Kennedy was shot. And he also ran the hotels where J. Edgar Hoover and his boyfriend Clyde Tolson used to vacation for free. And his lawyer was on the Warren Commission, Alfred J. And his job was to look into the backgrounds of Jack Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald and make sure that they didn't have any connections to organized crime, which both of them did. And of course, he came back with the result of no, just both lone. If Ruby did it for Mrs. Kennedy, and Lee Harvey Oswald is a lone nut, which is totally not true. But he's the guy that was responsible for that.
And when
RFK, and everybody knows Hoover wasn't going to look into the mob. He didn't even admit that they existed for a long time until Robert Kennedy basically forced his hand. And everybody also knows that Costello and Lansky had the goods on Hoover because they had those incriminating photographs, which I have now seen, finally.
You did?
It was disgusting, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oral sex. Yeah.
Wow.
I just kept bugging my contacts until, like, I needed to know. You know, I was like, I've always heard about these, you know, but I guess I thought I needed to see it. Now I wish I didn't.
Yeah. For research.
It was for research.
Yeah, it actually was
for research. I needed confirmation. That definitely.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because, of course, RFK is the one who prosecutes Roy Cohn. Roy Cohn is a Lansky agent in Hollywood. As you mentioned, runs the Ambassador Hotel for this Sheen family. And Earl Warren, as you mentioned in the video, is the one that signs the bond to get Cohn out of Alcatraz.
Roy Cohn, Mickey Cohen.
I'm sorry. Mickey Cohen. Who runs?
He got him out of Alcatraz.
Alcatraz. Is it? He runs the
Warren. The only person ever to get bailed out, actually.
Yeah.
Chief Warren signed that off. Cohen was in jail at the time that Robert was killed, and he was basically brain dead after that because an Italian mobster hit him in the head with a pipe. You know, he'd been having wars over in Los Angeles with the Italians already. They put dynamite in his house and, you know, good old mob stuff. That all fun.
But I mean, it was.
I mean, they killed Marilyn Monroe, and she had relations with John Kennedy.
Yeah.
Everybody knows about that.
Some people think that he was behind the murder of Marilyn Monroe. He was behind the, you know, the.
Yeah, they were. Not Mickey himself, but...
That network, that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. They did. Mickey was very... That was one of his niches, was blackmailing celebrities.
Yeah.
Was getting dirt on them and blackmailing them. And, you know, they had had in the Fairmont Hotel, there was a bug that led to the Bobby Baker case, which was just like what Kushner was doing. They were just like DC Madame was doing back in the early 2000s, mm-hmm. too. They're procuring hookers for boys and girls, by the way, for congressmen in exchange for state contracting. And all this gets picked up in the Bobby Baker scandal. And, of course, they had a closed session on that. And Johnson's deep involved with Baker. And a lot of the guys... I don't want to give too much away, but the people who own the book depository and the people who hired Lee Harvey Oswald and the people who involved with General Dynamics, which goes right back to the Crown family and Sheenigan, they're all in this. They're all in this because that's what they're doing. These oil tycoons and stuff are banging hookers and doing blow just like today.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost all came apart. But that Bobby Baker scandal basically... It was too big to fail. It involved so many high-end people that it was just sort of washed to the side after John Kennedy was killed. Johnson wasn't going to pursue it.
No,
obviously.
No. Now, with the you mentioned you zeroed in on the Port Authority and sort of real estate speculation. Of course, if you have foreknowledge of certain events, you can make a lot of money in real estate, and you use you quote Doug Valentine in the film about the importance of real estate.
A lot about organized crime. That guy does.
And and its connection to pretty much everything, drugs.
It's what the CIA does, the same thing.
Yeah.
You buy property. It's the first thing you have to do is procure property. If you're going to have a safe house, or you're going to sell drugs, or you're going to have prostitutes or something, you have to have property. I guess you could pay for hotels over and over again for a little while. You need a space, especially if you're going to import guns, drugs, whatever. Port Authority has its own police and its own ports. You know, when you wonder how some the hell someone gets drugs in jail because the cops bring it, that's how. And the fact that Kushner is bribing, asking police, paying them, what was it, $37,000, $10,000 went to the hooker, so $27,000. He's paying him all this money.
I'm sure that was the first time.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it was the only. I mean, I actually talked to some of the escorts, and it's so common. They had so many of these people in and out of there, and it didn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
But that none of them wanted to let me put some of the really juicy stuff in the film. They're worried.
Yeah. So, I mean, you see this in movies, like movies like the Godfather series, and also that movie Casino, where the gaming commission, the city councils are all, you know, invited into the casinos. They're all comped meals, and they're given markers and these things. And then after they've gambled other people's money, they go up into the hotel room and have fun with beautiful women, you know, that you wouldn't ordinarily get if they were just mechanics and accountants. And this is the allure of political power.
Bob Labudi and his brother's job was for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Labudi had already been in trouble for Grand Theft Auto and some other things, and Trump hired him and his brother anyway and gave him a helicopter. It's a cocaine smuggler. It's like the perfect toy. But you know, from talking to these folks, basically these high-end gamblers in Atlantic City that Trump opened up with Taj Mahal, and Trump doesn't drink or do any drugs, but he knows other people do.
Yes.
And he doesn't mind allowing someone else to provide it, and he just plays stupid, or is. But
Jeffrey Epstein, right? He's a fun guy to be around, likes the girls, a little young, you know, but...
Most of this was legal age prostitution, but still, you know, with coke and everything else, especially in the 80s, man, they're doing a lot of blow and Taj Mahal. And he acted like, oh, I don't. When Bob finally got caught bringing like 2/3 of a ton of marijuana in, and a lot of other drugs, but what he got pegged on was the pot, which was the lesser of all the things he'd been bringing in. And but it was still enough because it was his third count in a row. And Trump's like, I don't know the guy. I didn't recognize his name. Who is this? And then because I'm a fan, yeah, he's sitting there at WrestleMania 4 in the front row with Bob the Booty. I found his picture. I found their pictures together some other times, but I thought that was funnier to stick in there.
I mean, with Trump and the Kushners, of course, the Kushners is so this Jewish crime family, billionaire crime family that has connections to the Israeli state. And, of course, having the ear of the president raises all types of questions because you could say is sort of an asset of a foreign government married into the Trump family, having the ear of the president. Well,
that's why they shot cruise missiles into Syria. I mean, Eric Trump said it was his sister's influence. So you heard her saying there's beautiful babies, 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 babies. Yeah. And, you know, she's just hand in glove with Jared. And she didn't care about the kids starving in Yemen. She doesn't care about kids in Palestine or the other kids in Syria or Iraq, that they had just killed like 200 in an airstrike, civilians. She didn't care about any of them, but suddenly after this gas attack, which was never proven to be the Syrian government, still hasn't been, just like the other three previous ones, which turned out in the terrorists, he lobs these cruise missiles into Syria. He did restrain himself, though. It was kind of one and done, and then on to North Korea and whatever, and left Syria. Now what they're doing is backing the SDF Kurdish factions and their moderate al-Qaeda affiliates in the north. And they've pretty much abandoned Ahrar al-Sham and some of the – because it used to be the FSA and Ahrar al-Sham were the two strongest opposition forces. Now al-Nusra and, well, the Kurds. That's because they have U.S. air support. And the FSA is nothing really. And ISIS is on its way out and – Ahrar al-Sham and all the little lesser Sham groups, they're not doing too well. So, but that's not – it's not so much because of what Trump's done. It's just that what he stopped doing and more or less of what Russia, Iran, Hezbollah, and Syria have been able to push on their own.
Yeah, which factors into why you have this Russia story with Trump. And it's of course, at the end of the day, you have the U.S. government, NATO, going in and just making a mess of Syria, destroying the lives of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, creating immigration issues into Europe and these things. And just
they blame on Russia. It's amazing. Yeah. When they say Russian hacked the election, it's so stupid. It sounds like, all right, did they hack the voting machines or something? Like, no, no, no. It's like, so what are you saying they did? Leaked
information?
Information that, about the voters should have. you told people the truth about Hillary? I mean, they're supposed to know that anyway.
Yeah.
I wish Russia was influencing our country more because they have a better foreign policy than what we're doing. But
more balance. And yeah, I made the point that if you presume yourself to be a global empire running the world and involving yourself in the domestic affairs of so many countries and manipulating elections, which the irony of the U.S. government accusing another government of manipulating an election. Oh, no. I mean, it's irony.
Hillary was caught on a hot mic admitting that the U.S. Yeah. manipulated the elections to get Hamas into power.
Yeah. And
that's
what
they want.
But you would expect a foreign government to have, to try to influence an election to a certain extent. I mean, whether it's through the media or for release of information because they have a stake in the game. But of course, no one talks about, senators and congressmen who are dual citizens of a certain country.
Yeah, you want to talk about foreign influence. Every single primary winner and even the runners-up go talk at AIPAC.
Yeah, why?
Before anyone's elected. It's just every election since I've been alive, they go and talk to AIPAC. All of them.
Yeah, why isn't AIPAC forced to register as a foreign lobbyist? And of course that goes back to the Kennedy assassination.
Well, the last person to try and get him to do that was Bobby Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. That might be your answer.
Bobby Kennedy supported Palestinian right to return, and somebody killed him on the anniversary of the Six-Day War. The first anniversary of the Six-Day War, he was assassinated at a hotel
owned.
Where the Cohen Syndicate ran a gambling operation for the Sheen family.
Allegedly by a Christian Palestinian, but I think it was the coup de grace was probably delivered by that guy working for General Dynamics, so that's my...
Yeah, well, saying Eugene Caesar shot him in the head. I mean, they say Sirhan Sirhan shot him. He's 13 bullets out of an 8-shot gun in front of him, 3 of which hit him in the back. 1 from point blank. And, you know, John Pilger was there. And, I have a film that goes over this called Decade of Deception. Some idiot made a film called Decade of Deception right after, which is a bunch of goofy stuff. And they talk about Israeli art students, but not the actual Israeli art students. They talk about art students from Vienna who were in the... It's so dumb. But, speaking of the World Trade Centers, you know, you were talking about foreknowledge earlier. And that's a good point, because I asked people on 9/12, where did all those businesses go? Yes. You have all these businesses in the World Trade Center. However many millions of dollars worth of transactions going on all the time. Did they just not have work, or what happened? Like, where did they end up relocating? Because they got to do business. Like, American Express is there. Things, you know, got to move on. Where did they go? Well, most of them just went across the river to New Jersey, where somebody had already purchased 50 million square feet of office space waiting for them. And, you know, what else is funny is that that was Kushner. And the Port Authority, just prior to 9/11, sold the World Trade Center properties to Larry Silverstein and Frank Lowy. And Silverstein, and there was, got double insurance on it.
And who made that decision at the Port Authority to seal that deal? Wasn't it?
Oh, well, it was Weinstein and the rest of them. I mean, it's the regular who's who fellers over there. The one guy that was going against it ended up getting killed on 9/11 because he was actually at the World Trade Center. It's something else. But that's – if you – no one looks at the PA. And then, you know, Giuliani's always saying, well, the Port Authority said this and that. He just deferred to them for everything. It's amazing.
Now, you chart the Zionist takeover of the Port Authority to right after the Six-Day War or the early 70s?
Yeah, that's when it kind of started.
Which is kind of consistent with the, I would say, the sort of the...
That's when Atlantic City came into being, too.
This is the coming of age of the Zionist power, of Jewish power in the United States, and sort of the eclipse of the WASP power. Because the... From my understanding, the Port Authority before it was kind of used by the Rockefellers.
Yeah, and it's not like that was good either.
No. But that, you know, they built the David and the Nelson. The Twin Towers were called the David and the Nelson.
Right.
During a recession when there was a surplus of office space. You know. It's just interesting that these things kind of coincide with the sort of this phenomenon, the rise of the neocons, the ascendancy of Jewish power, which was always there in the United States. I mean, it dates back even to, back to the early 20th century.
Well, the Safari Club set up then. George Bush Sr. is the DCI in 76. And then you get Atlantic City in New Jersey from 74 onward. And Trump did make it. That was a pump and dump, too. He made it successful. He brought WrestleMania there two years in a row. And Atlantic City used to be a little Las Vegas. It used to be very popular, made a lot of money, and it went downhill fast. It was actually doing a lot better business with the mob than with the government.
But that's an interesting story because, and you chart this out in the film, the connection of Las Vegas Resorts International Trump. It starts out with Meyer Lansky, the Mary Carter Paint Company, the CIA front, and Meyer Lansky, and I guess you could say that they brought gambling to Atlantic City just at a time when they're after the Vietnam War ended, and this was an area where they needed to launder a lot of drug money. Same way Las Vegas was set up. This Las Vegas was a Chicago outfit. Looks like Atlantic City was a New York outfit, And,
right, basically.
And Trump
New York kind of got L.A., Chicago got Vegas.
Yeah.
And New York and New Jersey kind of bleed together. I mean, that's one.
Yeah. But the
I'd say it's one syndicate. There are some. They are different, but yeah.
I mean, you have this connection between Lansky and Trump, and of course Lansky connects to this to the Jewish mafia.
Lansky really connects everything.
Yeah, because he was man. Chairman of the board, more or less. Of what? Yeah.
Luciano was out, and you know Lansky did all those real estate deals in Florida. Mm-hmm. I mean, he himself was a real estate mogul, and he was working with Santos Traficante at the well, he had to. I mean, but who was you know involved in Cuba and we know about the CIA's liaisons with Sammy and Sammy Giacana and those fellers and the anti-Castro Cubans. But that's too big a story to explain. But yeah, Lance goes right back in through it and. You know, if people who follow this stuff, who understand the kind of golden age of the mob, it sort of fades out at some point. And what I'm doing with this film is saying, look, here's what they did, and here's the real estate deals they've been doing, and here's Donald Trump. And he's just right in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's aware of, you know, how far back it goes and what they did. He just wants to build things cheap and fast and get it done.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
Yeah, but, he would be described as sort of like a clean face that the mafia, the organized crime would use, the CIA would use.
They needed it. Yeah, they needed it, and he's kosher.
Yeah, same thing with that guy out in Las Vegas. Them. What's the guy in Las Vegas?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you couldn't use Hoffa or anything like that. They're too hot. It's just like John Gotti. What an idiot. Like, he's the worst mobster ever because he wanted to be all Hollywood Gotti and basically bragging about their operations and everything. And Sunshine's the worst thing for the mafia. The best mobsters, you don't know their names.
Yeah, like Al Capone.
Real estate moguls are really under the radar. They don't put their name up on their building like Donald Trump does.
Yeah. Right. Like Al Capone made a similar mistake back in the 30s.
Yeah,
he was too flamboyant. And he got attention, yeah.
He's a household name. You know, if you say mafia, I would say Al Capone and Jimmy Hoffa are probably the most famous.
Mm-hmm.
Even more than Lansky, probably, for people that aren't into it. It's part of that's because of Bugs Bunny cartoons. But
yeah.
They have Lansky in the cartoons,
yeah,
too.
I know.
Like, Mayor Shea, and you got Jimmy Blue Eyes behind him, the big dope for the...
Now, with Kushner's, of course, this conflict they had with Chris Christie, the current governor of Jersey.
Well, by the way, the Mary Carter Paint Company got into real estate in the Bahamas, too. I don't know if we glossed over that, but...
That's right, and that was what Paul Helliwell...
Always their avenue is you've got to control property before you can start any other operation.
Mm-hmm. And that was Paul Helliwell?
Well, there is a partnership between people, but
yeah.
That was originally was a CIA front.
Because mm-hmm. Paul Helliwell also facilitated the construction of Disney World in Florida, and they created those two towns. And the CIA helped Disney set up Disney World.
We know who the station chief was in Miami.
Oh yeah,
Ed Shackley.
Mm-hmm. Blonde ghost. Yep.
Yeah, the blonde ghost, and there's your real French connection there. I mean, you want to talk about moving heroin? Lucky Luciano had nothing on those guys.
Mm-hmm.
You can't compete with government when it comes to crime. Just can't.
Now, with the Kushners, the interesting case you mentioned was the Chris Christie thing. Was the Bridgegate was sort of a setup to go after Chris Christie. Now, why? What was their beef with Chris Christie?
Well, he prosecuted Charles Kushner.
He was the U.S. attorney who prosecuted Charles Kushner, right?
And so Jared Kushner is bragging about what happened, saying what a badass move it was. And Christie's own watchdog that he sent to the PA double-crossed him and basically took the fall for it. Like three of his underlings did. But Christie really... seems to have been innocent in Bridgegate.
Mm-hmm.
But the kind of cover story is, oh, this was to get back at, this was to get revenge against the governor of New York, or not governor, mayor, who didn't support Christie or something. That didn't make any sense. And, I mean, they shut down four or two of the four lanes going to the George Washington Bridge, which didn't allow emergency vehicles to get through. Dangerous. And these people just laugh about it. But that's the kind of hubris the Kushners have.
Now, you have all
Charles
this.
Charles Kushner went to jail, and he recruited Avron Labor and Richard Golovich, who are felons down there in Alabama, and brought them back to New York, and they're working for him right now.
And you have all
one
this
was doing a 10-year, and the other was doing a 7-year stint.
And all this is out there, and yet the media focuses on Ivanka Trump's shoe dispute with her clothing line. Or
talk about what some rude thing on Trump's Twitter.
Yeah.
Whatever. Like, that's nothing.
And you have another case. You mentioned the case of the fall of Robert Torricelli, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting, because he was saying, this guy's not clean either by any means. Fine. But he was saying that they need an independent inquiry into 9/11. And he was saying, well, you can't just let these intelligence agencies kind of grade themselves, because they're deeply involved in the problem, right? Like, if you're really naive and you think, let's just assume terrorists did this all by themselves and we just didn't catch them, then if that's the case, you want to know, well, how come we didn't notice? How come we didn't see any smoke? Why didn't we see this coming? So you'd have to look into the FBI and all the different people responsible, the CIA. Why didn't you know? Why? You know? Well, if you were to do that, and let's say it's the case that terrorists did not do it all by themselves, you're going to find that out too. And so when he came out, of course, they did not have an independent inquiry. And the inquiry that the Senate did do, they redacted until last year, and even some of it still redacted. And, you know, they let out the 28 pages, but there were over 100 pages redacted anyway. There was just 28 consecutive pages, and they finally partially unredacted that a year ago, you know. So it took them 16 years to do that. That it was just a joke. And then they set up the 9/11 Commission, which was even more of a farce, because there's so many conflicts of interest on that board. I mean, it was so bad. The original chairman was going to be Henry Kissinger.
Well, don't you want an elder statesman doing this with enough, you know, prestige?
No, I'd rather have like a Trey Gowdy or somebody look at it. But I did an investigation. There. The FBI field office reports the same. They're going off of field office reports from Denver and these different field offices that are talking about monitoring the 9/11 hijackers, Al-Hazmi and Al-Midhar in particular, because they came over using their real names. And that's where this information about Saudi Arabia using Osama bin Laden and Omar Bayoumi and their wives and Riggs Bank to launder money to these guys, which went all the way back to Prince Turk bin Fasil from Saudi Arabia and Bandar Bush. That's all in FBI field office reports. Well, if you tug on that thread some more and you read the field office reports from, I don't know, New Jersey, Miami, like the places where the other hijackers lived, the other 17 of them, 15 of them in Florida, then Israel's all over it. And there's 1,800 pages just on the dancing Israelis and the other urban moving system guys. It's available. It's just no one reads it, because or even knows that it's there to read, because of, you know, the Jonestown takeover of 9/11, which turned it into a goofy circus type of topic and made a tar baby out of the whole thing, saying there aren't any hijackers, or they're all still alive, or there weren't even planes, it was holograms and whatever. They get goofier and goofier every year, splitting hairs about nanothermite and all this nonsense. I'm like, dude, it's right there in front of you talking about it. I mean, you think of how stupid this story is with the dancing Israelis. It's like, oh, yeah, you went to college, you went in the military, and then you moved to the United States, you learned English, and you got a job for minimum wage moving furniture at a furniture company. All right, maybe. And then that same company, oh, it just happens to hire people who the counterintelligence database already had flagged as spies, and it closes on 9/11, and the owner just leaves furniture stranded in the middle of the warehouses and stuff and flees back to a foreign country. Mm-hmm. It happened to all happen. And all of you guys who were caught celebrating all have passports with immediate dates to fly out of the country, thousands of dollars stuffed in your sock, and you're filming the first plane heading. But you're just innocent tourists that came over to work minimum wage of a moving company. Oh, by the way, it also moved a 9/11 hijacker from New Jersey to Florida. And oh, looky here, of the 20 million people that live in Florida, you moved to Florida and you just so happened to live next to one 15 out of 20 million right next door. And then exactly the same time that this person moves back to New Jersey, so did you. And then you got a Brooklyn cell next to Muhammad Atta when he was there briefly. I mean, come on, like... Their story is so stupid, but it's hard to start talking about that story and all the other evidence and the South American drug connections and everything else, how they're paying for things and the art student cells, which aren't really art students, obviously. And all of that is kind of lost in the ether of stupid that surrounds 9/11 because there's so many dumb This happens with Kennedy too. Like mm-hmm. there are a lot of hypotheses on who killed Kennedy, and they seem to get goofier and goofier as time goes on. And it makes it so that conspiracy becomes taboo, and it shouldn't. I mean, what I did in this film, when I'm talking about these financial scandals, we're talking millions of dollars, sometimes billions, and I'm showing you primary sources right there. New York Times, New Yorker magazine, like it's was reported in the written press. It just, and it's on like local TV channels too. I have some clips in there, but you know, the whole thing like with McGreevy was just, oh my gosh, he has a wife and he's gay. Didn't talk about his boyfriend from Israel and how his visa was sponsored by somebody who got appointed to the Port Authority as the chairman and went to jail for blackmail and this and that and that. I mean, and it goes on. Like I said, Jared hired two convicts, and he's already back in business mm-hmm. with these guys. Avron Labor is a really huge scumbag, and McGreevy's got a long list of employees that were, you know, selling government land at cheaper prices in exchange for bribes, and they're playing around with hedge funds, and that's, you know, Kushner's wife's family is involved with that. It's just disgusting. I got so sick of it. Every rock I looked under, there was another corporate scandal. So these are conspiracies, all of them. They all conspired to do this, and a whole bunch of them got caught. They happen all the time. There's no reason for it to be taboo. You know, you don't have to listen to Alex Jones or some nut like that, who says prayers for Netanyahu on the air. Thinks the tap water makes the frogs gay or whatever. just, you know, don't let people like that. And another group, too, is like there is definitely Zionist nepotism going on here, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. And there are Jewish supremacists, just like there are white supremacists mm-hmm. or any other group like that. You can't conflate that with the Jews in general. I mean, that's as silly as, I don't know.
Well, like, that's the part of the, yeah, it's the reaction is part of the action, because obviously you're going to.
It's the criticism they want.
Yeah, it's the Talmudic strategy of promoting bad behavior among certain Jews, powerful Jews, and that creates the reaction.
There's a disproportionate amount of Jewish billionaires that have an affinity for the state of Israel. Imagine my lack of shock.
Gangsters. It started as a gangster state, and I'm not surprised that it's now a pirate's cove.
And Israel recycles that money they get from. They're doing the same gambit. You know, AIPAC is bribing Congress. Congress is sending tens of billions of dollars to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And they use a portion of that to continue bribing Congress to continue getting more money.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the rest of the money is coming from the state governments. You're talking about five or six guys. AIPAC is not collecting $2 from every Jew in the United States.
No.
You know, most Jews in the United States can't stand AIPAC. For real, most of them don't. It's just a few, like George Soros types, these billionaires,
mm-hmm.
that are giving them enormous amounts of money. And their way that they got their money is through state contracting, where they're doing the same thing on the state level that AIPAC's doing on the federal level, where they bribe the governors, get into key positions, award themselves state contracts, build real estate. And they, you know, they took advantage of the housing bubble, for example. Citigroup was instrumental in that. They got over $400 billion in bailouts. And they're sitting right there on the old 666 Fifth Avenue building that the Kushners purchased for an enormously exuberant price. They overpaid for it. They needed to have it.
Same with Goldman Sachs, which used AIG to bail them out because AIG couldn't, you know, they used the bailout of AIG to enrich the Goldman Sachs. And that's Lloyd Blankfein, who claims to be doing God's work up there.
Oh, for sure. Well, Bank of America swallowed up Merrill Lynch and Countrywide, both mm-hmm. of whom got bailouts. They act like they didn't, and they got all the TARP money too. And lo and behold, they did get a bailout from the Federal Reserve. It just wasn't the government. It was the Fed.
Which
is sort of the government. And it's not really private or government. The corruption is disgusting. And, you know, I put some nuggets in there about 9/11 and the real estate. But you look at these moving companies, Urban Moving Systems, White Glove Movers, Systems International. There's a bunch of them that were involved in this. As front companies during the events of 9/11, who sold them that property? Who did Dominic Suter approach to get his warehouses for Urban Moving Systems? Who do you think owned that property on the waterfront there in New Jersey? Take a guess. And Ertheim Wertheimer is there meeting just a couple days later with Bernard Carrick, who's the
mm-hmm.
commissioner of police in New York, who says an officer just handed him a passport of a 9/11 hijacker. He found knee-deep debris. Like, no one knows this person's name. Look what I found. I found a passport. It just happens to be of one of the hijackers. There you go. Pristine condition. And Wertheimer, who gave Carrick a $250,000 loan, which had no stipulations or conditions on it. He just gave him $250,000. That's how he probably got paid a lot more than that. But Kushner ends up going to jail because he was involved. He was involved in fraud and taking money from Gambino and Genovese syndicates. But the Wertheimer money goes there, and he's making all the excuses about the George Washington Bridge and the van, people arrested in the van there and all that. And then we find out in the field office reports that Paul Kersberg, who's kind of the ringleader of the cell that got busted filming the first plane hitting, was sent to New York by the Jewish agency, and Wertheimer is the board of governors of the Jewish agency. And Kushner and this guy are best friends. He's the richest man in Israel, one of the richest men in New Jersey, if not the richest. They're all tied together, and like Netanyahu is spending the night at Kushner's house, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and so come on, people, put it together. Like, yes, there's nepotism, yes, there's Zionists, and yes, the PA absolutely is pay to play, always has been from Rockefeller to now, and it's definitely Zionist occupied territory, and they already own the World Trade Centers just prior to blowing them up.
Now,
I've got a 5-hour documentary on that mess called The Empire of Math, so mm-hmm. I don't want to get overlap into something that people can see, but this Kushner-Trump edition, I thought it was like a little hour-long edition. It does touch on 9/11 a little bit, and it mm-hmm. touches on RFK a little bit, but I wanted to focus more on the modern things, like from about the 1980s to now, that Trump and Kushner were involved with, and their employees. And it's just an endless cycle of corruption. But what you see is these people aren't elite. They're not smart. I hate that word, elite. They're not elite. They might be elitist, but they're definitely not elite. They screw up all the time.
Yeah, they talk about how they promote each other, so the nepotism, how they promote each other, and also how they get their kids into these Ivy League schools just through showering them with money, which also betrays the corruption of the Ivy League system, in my opinion.
Oh, well, you know, there's a man who wrote a book about that.
The Price of Admission or something?
Yeah, The Price of Admission is the name of the book, but his name escapes me. But if you look up The Price of Admission, he dug into Harvard, for example. Harvard's considered one of the top, sometimes the top school in the country. And Jared Kushner and Josh Kushner both went there.
Oh, Daniel Golden, my notes here. Yeah,
yeah, Daniel Golden, that's what it was. They, the Kushners went there, and neither one of them had stellar grades or SATs, and just by any normal standard, did not belong in Harvard. But not only Charles, but Cheryl Kushner too, Sarah was his wife. They were both on this committee at Harvard where they donated $250 million, I think it was $250 or $2.5 million per year for 10 years or something
really?
Like that.
Okay.
It's an enormous amount of money. Yeah. Not for them, though. It's like no big deal. But and, of course, both their kids got in. And both their kids got pushed through.
This is after he was a convicted felon.
Yeah, this was after he got out of jail.
So this doesn't offend the sensibility of Harvard admission.
Yeah. But, well, they started that, I think, in 98
mm-hmm.
is when they started it. And he got out of jail in 2006, and he went in 2002. So mm-hmm. maybe it might have been before that time he went to jail. His wife was clean to that point. So it was before the McGreevy thing a little mm-hmm. bit. But he had already been in trouble. And it just – these guys are so wealthy that it just doesn't matter. They just tie things up in court for years. And he only went to prison a couple of years.
For his – yeah.
And that was for – I mean, if I was guilty of
yeah.
witness tampering and fraud and – no way.
I doubt it was hard time too.
No, I doubt it either. He just went there. It was like a big business convention.
And this is also derived from the fact he had a spat within his family. He just didn't manage his family properly, which is why he was also...
The only reason he went to jail is because they were fighting with each other.
Yeah.
That's the only time, really, they end up getting in trouble is when they fight with one another. That's when they...
It's funny.
Well, I know the judge is you. That's another funny thing in the Trump case where... he had hired all these, this is so funny, illegal immigrants.
Yeah, yeah. Poland. Irony, right?
I guess in the 80s was right. He had them demolish a building so he could put they demolished this department store so he could put the Trump Tower up where it is. And he basically paid for it all to go away. But the original judge for the case was Trump's sister, but she recused herself.
Mm-hmm. But didn't he write a letter to the judge?
Judge in the family.
Didn't he write a letter to the new judge or something?
Yes, he did.
And then Kushner's sister rents buys two condos in Trump Towers or something.
Yeah, that was for one of his underlings, a mafia guy, of course.
Okay, that was yeah, that's right. There was Labuti, right, or something. Labuti, I'm confusing it.
Yeah, that was your helicopter guy and his brother, and you know. He did good work for him. He brought in all the hookers and blow and stuff that he's supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
He was bringing in a 2/3 of a ton of marijuana, which is about what'll fit in a helicopter. And so who knows how many times he flew back and forth. Or whatever. You know, he gets caught, and Trump wrote him a glowing review, and yet he hardly knew the guy. Oh. Whatever.
Well, that's like, I mean, one of these things with Trump and the Russia thing is that the this involves the where there might be some legitimate area of investigation, but it's one of these areas where, of course, there's something there, something can be made of something. Was with the raping of Russia in the 1990s, the asset stripping that occurred, and the advent of the collapse of the Soviet Union, involving the Harvard Endowment and the Harvard boys, Jeffrey Sachs and Larry Summers and these guys. So
the Obama administration.
Yep, neoliberalism, these things which you've talked about, of course, neocolonialism, which is a part of neoliberalism.
Well, Anatoly Golubchik is a Russian mobster. He used to hold parties in Trump Tower.
Yeah, like, all these oligarchs.
He got thrown in jail for the second time for this online gambling scam. Mm-hmm. That's actually not in the film because I had already talked about it in a previous film.
Mm-hmm. But all this money that was taken out of Russia, all these assets that poured into the city of London and New York, of course, which obviously would inflate the stock market and also the real estate market, which would enrich Trump. So you could infer something from that if you wanted to. I don't know if there's anything direct, but apparently, you know, real estate is used for money laundering or for hiding bribes, which you allude to in the documentary. And you know, a lot of these Russian oligarchs and also Saudis have bought these apartments or condos in Trump Towers. So it's sort of a payment for some sort of favor or some for
yeah, legally services. You can say it. Yeah. So it's like, oh, I'm going to, like, a nice way to pay someone without actually paying them and put them on the payroll is say, I'm just going to rent some twin apartments on the 39th floor, or I'm going to rent the hotel at Taj Mahal for a couple weeks, and you don't even have to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Just rent it. That's a way of paying them off.
Yeah.
You rent something from one of their establishments, whether you use it or not, doesn't matter. Because that is a way of paying somebody for a favor without, you know, it looking like you paid them for a favor. Just like, oh, I just live in here. Oh, my daughter's going to move there or whatever.
You know? Yeah, you wash the deal.
Oh, so I just need two rooms. I need to rent four rooms and live in one of them. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And that's the same way that, you know, casinos in Las Vegas or in the Bahamas or in Atlantic City can be used to wash, you know, billions of dollars of drug proceeds.
And that's, oh, they did. They used them on Indian reservations too. You know, Trump would do things like gift somebody three Ferraris, two Bentleys, and all these exotic cars, you know, as a way.
Well, he's like Elvis Presley. He's just giving out Cadillacs, you know.
Yeah. Elvis didn't do any drugs. What are you talking about? Yeah, David Cole's, you hear David Cole's father actually had one of those Cadillacs from Elvis.
Oh, really?
Big pink one, yeah.
Big pink, oh.
According to David Cole.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, maybe. That's, but one, I think a part of this, the documentary, you tie it back to, well, one thing, you make the connection 9/11, and that is, of course, Kushner's newspaper, The Observer, is one that pushes the whole anthrax story.
Right, the first paper in America to start reporting on it.
This weird which indeed officially was an inside job, by the way. So if you do make connections to 9/11.
It wasn't Al-Qaeda or Iraq, like they said.
But nevertheless, if you remember, during 9/11, all these connections were made with the hijackers and the anthrax story.
Well, it said 9/11 on top of the note. It was sent from the locations of the hijacker cells. Like, again, when I was saying how stupid the Israeli story is, who knew where these guys were living? I don't know. Probably the guys living next door to them.
Mm-hmm.
But they write death to America, death to Israel on the anthrax note. So who do you think sent it? Dirt. But, officially it was blamed on Al-Qaeda, and they said James Woolsey's the brain child of this junk or mastermind. He and Gary Schmidt and Robert Kagan and the neocons at the Weekly Standard, you know, PNAC's little mouthpiece wrote about it, but they added this additional lie to Al-Qaeda sent anthrax, where Mohammed Atta met in Prague with senior Iraqi officials and they passed the anthrax to him. And the source for that was Israeli security. Oh, so really? And obviously they lied, because Mohammed Atta never was in Prague and never met Iraqis, and Iraq didn't have anthrax anyway, because they were saying they did. They said, oh, they have mobile weapons labs and they have VX gas and anthrax, and Colin Powell gave his speech to the UN and he held up a mock vial of anthrax and pointed to some stupid cartoons of the mobile labs that didn't exist. And but all of that happened, and then we invaded and murdered a million people. But it was interesting to me that the newspapers involved pushing these lies the most were owned by the Kushners, like the New York Observer, which now Jared Kushner runs. And none of it was true. And they weren't alone. I mean, the Times and the rest, and the London Times, the New York Times, they all reiterated these lies.
Mm-hmm.
They also started retracting them as more information came in. But guess who never did?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the damage was done, of course, because the retractions never get the same attention as the original stories and these things.
Right. They waited till Iraq was already invaded. And then they're like, oh, by the way.
Whoops.
Oops.
Then no one's going to give back the money either. All the contracts and all that went out to pay for that operation. But you spell out also this, the Zionist agenda behind something going as far back as the Kennedy assassination, both Kennedy's killings. Because when we think of the assassination of Kennedy, we think of JFK, but really it involves RFK.
Right, and I have to ask people, I'm like, so you have your theory about JFK, and then you have some other theory about RFK, and I asked them, you don't think whoever killed one of them probably killed the other one? Like, they had a similar motive, possibly, to kill both of them? You could have two separate events, sure. This faction was able to kill the president and cover it up, and another totally different faction was able to kill the potential president, former attorney general, and also cover it up, or the same faction was able to do both. But they don't really look into Robert's death as much as John's, and Bobby Kennedy's assassination is not hard to figure out at all. When we look at Sirhan's lawyers, they're all mob lawyers, all of them, very famous ones too, and he was in debt at the racetracks to them and Alessio and all these guys.
Wasn't one also under indictment?
Yeah.
Federal indictment? Okay, that's grounds for a mistrial in my book.
I mean, they found the gun. They have the receipts that Caesar said, I sold that. Yeah, you did, 3 months after shooting Robert, not before. And it's so sloppy. And if the internet and all had existed back in 1968, it would have been over in a day, but it didn't, and so they pretty much got away with it. But I think there's still interest in the Kennedys, and a lot of that, as bad as the film was, is because of Oliver Stone.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't get in the Israeli angle or the mafia angle. He laughed at me. You think the mafia? Because Arnon Milchan was the executive producer. He's an Israeli billionaire and the largest arms dealer to Israel ever, and he wasn't going to go down that route. But they did talk about Oswald and Clay Birdshall and Ferry there and Guy Bannister's cell, and kind of went over like the kind of limited hangout part of Kennedy, gets you about halfway there and then leaves you in the dark. So, but what the best thing the film did was it made people interested in the Kennedy assassination again. So I'm hoping to fund my own film so I can tell people concretely what I believe happened and I can prove it. I always document the hell out of my stuff, probably with overkill, but does take a lot of time.
Yeah, with Kennedy, of course, one who spelled it out was the late Michael Collins Piper.
Yeah, his sixth edition of Final Judgment had all the characters there, and I talked to him for like over 3 hours about JFK. It's up on YouTube for free.
Interview, yeah.
It's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And we went over James Jesus Angleton, and we talked about Arnon Milchan, and we didn't get to Daley Plaza because, I ended the recording, but I'll tell people now on your show what happened was he was there, I guess, at the Spotlight or whatever office. At that time, he was still on the East Coast before he got surgery on his heart. And they were kicking him out of the building because we've been talking for 3 hours and 40 minutes or something, But it's a really complicated topic.
I can see the cleaning crew there. Get out of here. We got to clean here.
I'm about to explain Daley Plaza. Go away. Right? And it would have been a
Florida
awesome.
Vacuum. Get out of here.
I promise. Like, I'm not gonna. I'm gonna wait till I can have you back on, and we'll do the rest of it, right? Because that's like the end, right? And of course, he passed away before I had him on again. But
yeah,
I talked to him without recording it, which I so regret. We were talking about doing a show on RFK on the anniversary of his death, which of course Michael died just a few days before that. So we had it all prepared and everything. And the reason I couldn't have Piper right back on right after I had him on, and the reason it took me like three tries to get him on, is because he was in this huge fight with the 9/11 kooktards, James Fetzer and these idiots, about Sandy Hook and stuff like that. It's a huge waste of time. And they ate up the last year of his life, him arguing with these idiots. And I wish – it's not like he knew his time was about to run out, of course, but I wish he just told them to fuck off and continue to have the conversations with me and moving forward on RFK and JFK, because he knew so much, and I'm still sad about it. Now, and it's just somebody I talk to about politics and interview, but he's one of my favorites. And
yeah, I mean, I hear people talk about him, and like, people write him off as anti-Semite, whatever that's worth. And I really cringe when I hear that, because when I actually bothered to read, people actually bothered to read what he wrote or listen to what he's saying. You know,
yeah, he was. He started calling himself anti-Semitic sarcastically, because he's like, I'm wearing this label forever now anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
But
he really was.
Yeah, there is a YouTube video. He's giving a lecture. Looks like he's in the 90s. He's younger. And it's on film. It's not even on video. And he spells out what he writes in Final Judgment. You know, the Clay Shaw, Guy Bannister, and David Ferry connection all connect to this Permadex, which is owned by Tibor Rosenbaum, this international credit bank of Geneva, Switzerland, and this was the chief money laundering outfit for the Mossad, for Meyer Lansky, rather, and the Brothman family. And it's Tibor Rosenbaum was such a important figure with the Mossad that pretty much when you talk about Tibor Rosenbaum, you're talking about the Mossad, and that connection is there. This goes back to JFK's.
Especially at that time, because they were pretty much brand new.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't as institutionalized. So personalities, you know, certain Hollywood directors or certain editors in Las Vegas, like Greenspun, these figures, were very important in this sort of illegal arms shipment and financing, the supporting of Israel, particularly before Israel was official, because they ensured the pipeline of arms going into Palestine to deliver to Fait Accompli in 1947, you know, when they forced the Palestinians out.
Charlie Winters and those guys.
But, you know, it gets into NUMAC and this whole espionage stuff. But when you really look at that connection, of course, what JFK was doing was he'd been pushing back because of the American Zionist Council and also the nuclear program, I guess. And that's
the ZOA is now
APAC.
I mean, they're the Zionist American organization, but
yeah.
The American Zionist Council is APAC. I mean, and yeah, they just changed their name.
And appreciating this is and I think Michael Collins Piper spelled it out well, because he wasn't a Kennedy fan. It's kind of like I view that. I never was a big fan of the Kennedys, not being a Democrat or anything. But it's kind of funny because I am Catholic, and what they represented. Because, you know, they were corrupt, particularly the father. They made deals to get elected. You have to make deals to get elected.
Joe Kennedy turned to Chicago to save his life.
Yeah.
He pissed off the guys back east so badly in Boston.
But I guess the key thing was when Joe Kennedy died, though.
Should not be romanticized.
No, they're not. Let's look at it honestly. Let's look at it with a clear eye, a sober analysis of the stuff. But
they were not getting out of Vietnam, because that's always the big – I'm like, really? Because they procured $6 billion for this TFX 111 fighter jet with McNamara, and they had – I mean, no, they weren't. And Bobby supported it, and he supported the Bay of Pigs too. And so that wasn't the reason. And they weren't challenging the Fed. His executive order 1110, all that did was limit who could issue silver certificates, so it actually helped the Fed. It was none of the typical Johnstown baloney that you're given. Hey, Howard Hunt, That's not what happened. But Piper was barking up the right tree.
Mm-hmm.
And I had come down the same path without, unfortunately, knowing his work until pretty late. But that was actually a good thing, because I had independently confirmed what he had researched and gotten to the same conclusion. But I did it a lot faster because I grew up with the internet.
Yeah,
he did it with the paper system, which is amazing.
But he draws this diagram. He says, within this box, he says, is the Zionist interest. And within that box is, you have the mafia, you have the CIA, you have the military-industrial complex. So it's not, it is a confluence or a sort of a grouping of interests that wanted, that for various reasons wanted to kill Kennedy, but it's all centered within the Zionist interest. And that was his theory, which I think is I think holds a lot of water in my opinion.
Well, the MIC was going to make money no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I just said, they had already procured all this money. They're combining naval and Air Force budgets and so on.
So that gets into
the
like
mafia had lost over $1 billion when Castro came to power and kicked him out of Cuba. That's why they made Vegas.
Yep, Vegas. Yeah, and also they owned. I guess it was the the Shine family that had a large amount of stock in General Dynamics. And that TFX fighter thing, which is Boeing, and that,
Boeing didn't get it. They should have, but they didn't end up getting it. They run General Dynamics, and General Dynamics is usually number four when it comes to weapons contracting. Mm-hmm. Sometimes third. It's always Lockheed and Boeing, and then sometimes it's Northrop Grumman, and sometimes it's General Dynamics. And nowadays they all merge together anyway, but.
Yeah, through interlocking directorates, they all, it's all one happy family.
Yeah, a lot of VOD overlap for most of these things, and they usually, it's a Zaibatsu where they have a media parent company and some sort of arms procurement or manufacturer, and then, of course, politicians.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, the spouses of politicians, or, this politician is a consultant or some other bullshit job where you just get paid.
That's it. Bell Helicopter or.
Yeah, Baby Huey made a lot of money on Vietnam. I call it the war of helicopters and heroin.
Yep.
That's to me what it was. And Shackley and all those guys made a killing literally and laundering money through Australia and all that. We've talked about that before in another show.
You can hand bank and.
Mm-hmm.
That's Shackley, that's Colby, and that's where Doug Valentine gets into the Phoenix program, and sort of this how Vietnam is sort of a testing ground for various.
His latest book is really, really good.
Yeah, it's a good it brings
it's
everything together.
CIA is organized crime.
Mm-hmm.
It's badass. Mm-hmm. I recommend everybody get the ebook at least. Just. There's an interview, a couple of interviews I did with him, one on Ukraine that's in there, that we also talk about how, with Ukraine, what do they do? Set up, get property, number one, buy all that up so you can have your safe houses and base of operations and things. And the CIA is just like organized crime. It's a little bit more legitimized, and they just classify anything that's incriminating. It's amazing, but, you know, Donald Trump, people thought he was this maverick going to go against the system. He's less ingrained in the system than the Clintons, because you couldn't be more lifetime politician in that family from Mina to now, you know. But he's got skeletons in his closet. He's worked with the mob. He's got his hands dirty. He's got Zionist in-laws seem to be influencing him, and he'll be talking to Putin in a couple weeks. Maybe he'll get set straight on a few things, I'm hoping. But, you know, people need to know, even if it wasn't Donald Trump, this system with the Port Authority and bribery and this pay-to-play gambit is wasting billions of dollars in New Jersey and New York.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they could have such a better quality of life.
And that's the tragedy of it all. Yeah.
If they were not involved in this bullshit cycle, so that Zionists can make more money off of real estate deals and fraud, you know, with hedge funds and selling office equipment and all the crap I outlined and the different scams they were doing. All those people were losing their money, losing their houses, just so a few can gobble them all up and make money and then use it to further the interests of a foreign state. It's really outrageous. We need to cut off all aid to Israel and call a spade a spade. These people are racist, and that's how they view the world.
Well, that,
they see themselves as a Jewish state. So
yeah, and
I don't.
Yeah, and the Kushners also, as you point out, are big funders of these settlements, which is just encroaching further and further into
Right. And settlements are illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Like even our own government has said, try to freeze the building of them, right? Of course, they build more anyway. And the Kushners finance it. That's the most extreme. Like the settlements are the largest agitator in the West Bank. I mean, there's the blockade on Gaza and the settlements. That's why you can't have a two-state solution. How are you supposed to have a two-state solution when the second state that's proposed is peppered with racial colonies?
Yeah,
that's what a settlement is.
As bad as the IDF is, these settlers with their militias are particularly brutal to the native population.
They killed three teenagers like a week and a half ago. A settler ran into a girl with a car. Just left her there to die. They shot another girl. Said she had a knife. The video of her while approaching there, though, she doesn't have anything in her hands anyway. And they shot a 16-year-old boy who all he was doing was protesting in solidarity with the hunger strike. And he was in a coma when he had his 17th birthday there in the hospital. Luckily, he could go to a hospital that still had electricity because they cut off electricity because the PA is a... no longer selling the fuel for the power plant because they're having a pissy match with Hamas, and now Saudi Arabia has left Qatar an ultimatum. Qatar doesn't support Palestine. Qatar supports Hamas. This is a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
Hamas, like any other government, sucks. But you're seeing a power play now. They gave them 13 demands, and of course they want them to stop. They want to stop supporting Iran and stop supporting Hamas.
Mm-hmm.
They don't support Iran. They just do business with Iran like anyone else in the area. And they kind of have to because they share the parched gas fields, which there's no way around it. Like, it's on both their territories. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, they got their – that's another topic, what Saudi Arabia is about to do. I'm getting ready to make a short video with a map of all the groups in Syria. Call them piss, shit, and vomit because they're they're yellow, black, and green flags, right? So it just worked out that way. I don't say that in the video.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I refer to them, to insiders.
That's the important dynamic to the Middle East and the conflict there is the that it is really the NATO, the Anglo-Zio Empire, which encourages, foments Islamic radicalism to prevent any development of that area, to retard development of these nation states that might look after the interest of the people.
They don't want any Ba'athism or Pan-Arabism with any kind of unification. They want as much ethnic and religious strife as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, of course they foster the fanatics.
Mm-hmm.
And the Anglo Empire did that with the creation of Israel, too. They support Zionists. They support the Wahhabis. They support all the crazies.
Mm-hmm.
From Jandala, MEK, whatever.
And it's a strategy of tension.
Yeah. And now, right now, they're backing the Kurdish factions, which are also killing the Christians, Armenians, and ethnically cleansing Arabs and going after Assyrians. And it's not like, oh, the poor Kurds. The poor Kurds are ethnically cleansing the other minorities in Syria. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they're not out there saying, oh, the caliphate or what have you, yet. But they're partners with people who do. And they've been murdering people and chopping off heads and everything all the same.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. supports them.
It's the same story.
The only big difference is Turkey doesn't. Turkey supported the original jihadis. They've got a lot of problems with the Kurds in Turkey, so they're not going to support them in northern Syria.
And the Kurds have always been used by the by foreign powers to divide and conquer, whether it's Iraq or Iran back in the 70s and 80s. It's, you know, they've always been kind of stirring up to cause problems and kind of abandoned. That's an old story.
They are the empire's go-to cannon fodder.
Yeah. Same thing at the World War One with the Armenians and Turkey, where the British fomented problems, and everyone talks about this Holocaust of the Armenians in 1916, 1917, and that was a product of British strategy, because
people argue about that, like, can you admit there was a genocide, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or an attempted one, at least. And of course there is, but, you know, only one special group gets all the attention on on who got killed. And it's not the American Indians. counted up the number of museums for American Indians versus Holocaust museums. There's new ones being built. There's one in Dallas being built. I was just in Dallas this year. What? Yeah, March. I was just happened to land there on my way to Washington to the anti-APAC conference, and I was like, I'm going to Daley Plaza. So I went there, got as much footage as I could for my film, and right there in the parking lot, like right around the corner, is another Holocaust museum.
In Dallas, Texas.
I'm like, it's right next, it's adjacent to the like Kennedy gift shop thing. Yeah, in Dallas.
Well, that's the same thing, you know, here in Washington, nearby Washington, D.C., they have, you know, of course, the museum there that's now, I think, supported by tax dollars. Built by endowment, but it's supported by tax dollars. And, you know, this is something that didn't even occur in the United States yet. You know, and you ever gone through that is just one, you know, it's...
There's a lot of horrible things you could point to that happen in other places, to a foreign people in a foreign land, but
why
we don't really have a tribute to the people who were murdered in our own land.
Mm-hmm. Well, the 5 million Vietnamese that were killed during the Indochina War, and
all the Koreans that were killed.
All the Koreans,
Iraqis now, probably a million plus, and all the people, kids starved to death from sanctions in between the two Iraq wars.
Well, what's going on in the Congo? I mean, 5 million people is estimated. Who counts?
Yeah, and they just keep giving money to Paul Kagame in Rwanda, who used to be from Ugandan intelligence. And he's out there with M23 and the rest of them hanging people and cutting throats and all the rest of it.
I talked
to Thomas Mountain from Eritrea about the Ethiopian-Somali war. You want to talk about stuff that doesn't get talked about, right?
This the fomenting of civil wars on the continent of Africa to free up cheap resources. That's the whole neocolonialism that's going on there, whether it's diamonds, rare earth metals, oil.
It's where the small armaments get dumped, too. It's like they go to Eastern Europe, and then they go to the Middle East, and then they go to Northern Africa.
Remember the Larry Summers memo when you worked for the World Bank, talking about Africa could be used as a dumping ground for waste and pollution because the lifespan of Africans is short anyway?
I'll tell people listening here something interesting for I know. Look up e-waste Ghana.
There's entire
rivers full of old computers and TVs and stuff in Ghana.
And
just look up e-waste Ghana as a Google image. You don't even have to watch a video. Just look at that.
And then we'll wonder why people are sick in Africa.
Yeah.
Not to mention malnutrition.
Well, these kids are there strip burning the material to get the little bits of precious metal out.
Yep.
We sent them wire strippers. I actually organized this in college. And I said, obviously we'd like people to stop dumping their waste there, but that's probably not going to happen. So we got money and sent them a bunch of wire strippers. So now they can go there and rip the rubber off without burning it and get the copper out.
Yeah, so I mean, that's what's difficult about trying to understand.
It's a practical solution because they weren't going to stop dumping waste.
When we're talking about economic exploitation, you can take a traditional leftist view of it, which is boring and also just a bad way to look at things. But the notion of imposing your external costs on weaker people seems to be a business model for this sort of this, I'm going to call it state capitalist or corporatist system. And that's whether it's you destabilize a country, you exploit it to get its resources that are cheap, including the labor itself, because if you kick people off their ancestral homelands, force them into crowded cities within a generation, wow, look at all this cheap labor. Let's build a Nike factory here. Then you turn around and say, well, this is the best deal these people have. They're going to cause these people to be unemployed. But no one looks back to the generation before when they were forced off the land by mercenaries or by a fomented civil war.
Then you use transfer pricing.
Yeah.
Selling 20 of your own subsidiaries at a loss and saying, oh, I can't pay taxes on that.
Oh, yeah, that's that Mark Rich company.
Well, Glencore did that all day. Glencore, they're not the only ones. But I did a film on that called Neocolonialism in Africa, and I think that's what you're referring to when you talked about in Zambia or Zambia. That's what they did in the copper mines.
But you're exploiting the weaker position and misery of other people, which the market shouldn't do. It doesn't have to do. It can be a mutual beneficial relationship, but the problem is you have to approach
it. If the government wasn't involved, but what it is you got to blame the government of Zambia too, but they're not really in charge of fully in charge of who they elect there, because there's so much money and influence to manipulate the elections.
It starts with someone starts to do the right
thing, the CIA comes in and says, you better change what you're doing or you're going to end up in a small plane crash.
Well, obviously, you're a communist if you propose that. You know, if you're an Arbenz or a Mossadegh. Who's that, the German Herrhausen, the German banker who said maybe we should think about forgiving all this third world debt and his plane crashes? Or he's kidnapped by communists or something, you know. Gladio and murdered. You have the guy who used
communism as an excuse for cronyism. And of course, communism is definitely the wrong direction to go, because if you think, like, every problem you're going to have with capitalism, that people from bailouts, war profiteering, etc., all of them involve government, all of it. So why do you want to give the government more power? Like, that's not going to give you less cronyism. That's going to give you more.
The epitome of cronyism.
Oh, you're going to end up starving to death on top of being robbed.
Why do you think Rockefeller liked Mao? Mao is a great man. He's done wonderful things in China. But, you know, who's that guy, Mattei, who ran the Italian oil company, who's working behind the Seven Sisters? His plane crashes because he's working at a more equitable deal for these companies.
I bet we could do a timeline of mysterious small plane crashes.
Yes.
Kennedy Jr. I mean,
I was like, when I came across, I was like, nah, come on, I can buy RFK. Why JFK Jr.? All of a sudden, I'm thinking, oh, wow, that is weird. It was really weird.
It's worth looking at.
It is weird. That is weird. And that's like,
are so paranoid. You know, the FBI had files on John Lennon.
300 pages of them, yeah.
They just, I mean,
and not to mention, you figure who runs the record companies? A dead aging rock star is worth more to a record company than a living aging rock star. Just on that basis.
With Michael Jackson.
Yep, and also what's his name? Jimi Hendrix. That's another interesting story there.
Oh, I have not looked at that one at all. But
Jeffries was his agent. Was a mob CIA connected agent who took multi-million dollar life insurance policy on him, and of course he died of having wine in his lungs. So that's another, you know, they get in the whole that gets in the Hollywood and the criminal element there and the mafia. Of course, these strange deaths. Of course, we alluded to Marilyn Monroe and why that might have occurred, but yeah, I mean, it's just when you realize who actually runs the music business, some of these strange deaths and the conspiracy theories behind them aren't quite as ludicrous as you might initially think. You know,
they're not, but they, you know, conspiracies become ludicrous because what I said earlier, yeah. Like these goofballs. And that's why I just really wish I could stress for people, like, don't listen to that stuff. Like, and if you want to introduce somebody to something, like, give them one of my films. I don't say anything crazy. I don't talk about Luciferians or Bavarian death cult or any of that stuff. Whatever I'm saying, whether it's War by Deception or The Empire Unmasked or Trump's Zionist Ball and Chain, it's all information that is available in primary sources. It's mm-hmm. just a pain in the butt to put it all together.
Well, that's what it is. I mean, that's why I think you have to take the time to actually, in this case, watch the video several times and take notes.
Yeah, and look at it, because what I'm showing you is like there. I'm explaining it. I'm summarizing it, and I'm showing you documents proving what I just said.
Mm-hmm.
So that I'm not just making, you know, speculate or anything like. There it is. There's the title. Now you can go Google that title and read the entire paper if you want. I did. But I told myself I'm not going to make another five-hour film on this. I got it down to 1 hour by cramming in a little extra information in the visuals.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Well, I mean, you have to approach these things like a criminal investigation. Right, and people don't do that. 9/11 was never approached as a criminal investigation. It was highly politicized.
Neither they spent was less on it than they did on Monica Lewinsky.
Yeah, which is another diversion from the real story about Mena, Arkansas, and all. You know, I mean, of all the things that Clinton did,
he was guilty of so much worse than infidelity and perjury. I mean,
yeah, I remember I was I had a friend, father, he was a World War II veteran, and he hated Bill Clinton for all the reasons that he would hated the Vietnam generation. And the fact he was a draft dodger, he used to call him the draft dodger. And I understood he was a World War II veteran who signed up to go fight for it, believed he went off to go fight for his country. So it's a cultural, it's a generational cultural difference. But the least objectionable thing that Bill Clinton ever did was not go to Vietnam.
Yeah, exactly.
You're right. I mean, that's like.
But nevertheless, he had gone.
Yeah, exactly.
And stayed there.
of all the good people that went and didn't come back, right? That's the least objectionable thing you do.
There's the funny thing. Sometimes they're on ANC report, this thing called Space Kook. And it was this second or third, I think it was the second episode they did, they had Hillary on as a guest, like a fake guest, and mm-hmm. Bill in the background. It's so funny. It's really, really good.
What
but those two are going to get hammered in my film on Iran-Contra.
When does that due out?
I'm hoping by end of the summer. Depends. I got things going. I'm writing a book, too, so a lot of stuff going on, but
okay, because the Iran-Contra explains so much.
Compromise, that is awesome.
Yeah, I have that. That's because that explains Iran-Contra. It's almost like the that scandal.
Well, that explains kind of the Arkansas, Louisiana part of it.
Yeah,
but then there's a thing. There's a California section, and then of course you have Iran and Israel. And if you get Robert Perry's books, like October Surprise and things, that'll get into the foreign policy, and then. There are a lot of different sources, and I'm not just talking about Gary Webb and all that in California. There's more, but those are the kind of three geographic spheres, and then, well, obviously Nicaragua. And that's how my series is going to go. I'm kind of take it, you know, this is what was happening in Arkansas, because that covers your, you know, your machine parts and some of your other money laundering. Mm-hmm. And also some drugs, but pilot training and that kind of thing. California is definitely in the narco business. And then you've got your illegal plane parts and that kind of stuff going on with the Iran faction that got kicked out and using Israel as a middleman. All that's going on. So, and then you have the trial. So I'm thinking it's going to be a four-part series in that order. Like Ollie North just didn't even – he's like, yeah, I did it. And –
and I'm running for Senate.
And it was right, too. He didn't care. He ran for president. He ran for president. Like, wow.
He almost became
senator. You really don't know what you look like, did you?
Yeah. He almost became senator from Virginia in 1994.
I know. Hair.
You know,
Trump ran for president back in 2012. Remember that?
Yeah.
No one paid attention to him then.
Well,
strange strategy. It's like, I'm going to troll. You watch.
Hey, have you read Valentine's book, Hotel Tacloban?
Yeah, his first book?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
I just bought it. I was thinking I was going to read it and think of an maybe hitting up for another interview, just talking about that experience and also his experience with his father because of the Vietnam War and the generational gap that it created, because he's said some interesting things regarding that. And some
yeah,
of the
they
more,
didn't see eye to eye on that war.
Yeah, the deeper things of the effects of the Vietnam War. He's talked about, someone asked him, what was the motive of the Vietnam War? He said some very interesting things, not just the military-industrial complex and heroin, but also the fundamental change of Vietnamese society to bring it into the, for, bring it in more or less into the New World Order, for lack of a better word. But the idea that, you know, it became, you know, before the war, it was a rice-exporting nation, largely independent, despite under French tutelage, but under French Empire. But the sort of the...
got to make them debt slaves.
Yeah, that's it. Debt slavery. Now there are factories there for Western companies to build, you know, clothing and these things. And I thought that, that's an interesting element to that whole... Because that's another, I think, a larger project for all these wars is to do that, turning them into debt slavery and bring them into the system.
Well, that's the big thing on Iran's nuclear mm-hmm. issue. It's not about really thinking about the nuclear bomb. It's
yeah.
They don't want them to have nuclear power because that frees up all the oil they're currently consuming for electricity and would allow them to put it on the market.
Yeah.
Which would allow them to have enough revenue to not have to borrow so much money from these global institutions that love to drive people in debt and live off the interest. It gives them economic independence. That's what they fear.
Yeah, the same thing, occurred with Libya, because Libya was getting, the sanctions were being removed, and that sweet crude was going to flood the market. Which
and he got rid of his WMDs,
yeah.
Just like they asked, because that was the conditions. And then, of course, he didn't have WMDs, so he got invaded.
And the whole idea of an independent course, you know, the French
definitely did not want that happening in Northern Africa.
Yeah.
So it could serve as a model for everyone else.
Yeah, like a decent life.
Abandon all these leftist policies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and have a real market. And let, you know, don't go the way of Venezuela.
No.
Go the way that Libya was going to go, more than likely.
Yeah, I was talking to someone about socialism. He said, the one thing that's worse than regular socialism, it's African socialism.
I tell people, what's it called when a group of people have to work, but it's another group of people who aren't working that benefit from that? Slavery or socialism?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, could be either one.
Well, it turns out the people that run the world have never really lost their taste for slavery. They just have to remarket it. And there's ways you can do that. you're just recreate slavery, and you can do that with
or theft.
With
I mean,
theft. Yeah,
they love socialism for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Israel's America's biggest welfare queen.
Well, that's what
followed they, by yeah. You know, Citigroup and Goldman Sachs and Lockheed Martin. Those are your real welfare queens.
Yeah, it's the bailouts and the subsidies, the contracts. It's socialism for the rich, capitalism for the poor. You know, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
which is how it actually is.
Yeah, and this creates this huge concentration of wealth because, as you detail in your film, is this sort of this revolving door where they get bailed out and they buy up resources, they can goose the market, crash the market, buy up competitors, and oh look, we're the winners. We're just smarter than everyone else. That's what it is.
And there's nothing intelligent about it. They're just crooks.
Mm-hmm.
When they go out on their own and try and invest their money by themselves, they end up losing everything. They create Ponzi schemes. Some of them end up in jail. Like, all this has been happening. They've been doing all these screwed up things, going to prison, and it's just not big media.
Yeah.
It's not on TV, and it's not going to be.
Well,
because that, you know, you hear that kind of story four or five times in a row, and it's really all every year they're doing things, then you're going to think, oh, man, there's something in common with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see a pattern? Zionist ideologue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like you point out, it's the obviously with any criminal outfit or organization, ethnic nepotism is going to factor in because you want to promote within the group because there's group cohesion. You can trust each other a certain way. You know, it's just that we get a lot of that in the popular media with the Italian mafia and Sicilian mafia, how the family and, you know, this is
supposed. Theirs was kind of because that's their language and yeah. that's who they could work with. So it wasn't all like just an idea of some sort of racial cohesion. It was just they speak Italian.
Mm-hmm.
And
they were marginalized.
Japanese mafia is all Japanese because yeah. I speak Japanese, and they have a lot of Chinese and Korean ethnic minorities within Yakuza too, but they all speak Japanese. So.
And the fact that you're if you're a marginalized group, and this is how you cope with the higher criminality of the current system. This is like how the Italian mafia formed, because all of a sudden you had the Rockefellers, the Harrimans, the Morgans. And these who were big time.
Yeah, yeah, gangsters. Irish mob in Boston. And
yeah.
I think they're making a film about Whitey.
Yeah, of course, that's no example of cop. Government, right? Helping a criminal become a bigger criminal for their own reasons. You know.
Yeah, none of these things could last or do what they do to scale without government cooperation. Mm-hmm. Just couldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you can see from state to state. Like, they have the exact same laws against heroin in Japan as they do in New Jersey. New Jersey got a big problem with heroin, and Japan doesn't, even though they're equally illegal.
Yeah,
right? Why there's such more demand in one area and such more providence? Because the government's the one bringing it in.
Mm-hmm. And I think in New Jersey, there's a saying on the streets that goes something like, make a law, start a business. that's what it is.
And, well, I hope people in New Jersey will watch this film because it shows how fucked up all their governors have been, and probably they probably know some things I didn't even catch, but it gets just sickening after a while. I mean, it's everybody.
Well, all these bureaucracies, multiple layers of bureaucratic offices and departments.
I mean, from the cops to the PA to the real estate guys, it's just, I mean, even like school and superintendent and stuff, like, stole money. Like, everybody's doing it. The trash collection people were stealing money. And had it's just like every industry is involved in this crap. And
it's amazing any wealth gets created at all in that environment. You know.
Well, I mean, yeah, they actually are deeply in debt.
Like, yes, that's a whole function
Jersey
of the bank.
City and New York City owe more money than they're making.
Well, that's what's funny about that's what's important about understanding the whole idea of the centralized bank warfare model, because it's all designed to create perpetual debt through the imposition of the fiat dollars, and this is how the Anglo-American Zaire Empire function is the imposition of dollars on the world economy, the dollarization of the global economy, because that's how you are able to continue this continual perpetual debt until whenever it crashes, or if it ever crashes. But it's constant debt slavery. And
we've just perfected that debt slavery. It's a lot of the criminals that got sent to Australia just owed money, arbitrarily raised their tenants at rents, and you know, a lot of that was motivated by a sheep. There was a new way of processing wool, and it became more cost efficient to have sheep on the land than tenants, so they drove the tenants out on purpose by raising their rates.
Yeah, and then you have the phenomena of paupery, because everyone's forced off the land. Then you have.
I want to do a documentary about Ireland and what happened, really happened with the potato famine.
Yeah, the forced starvation. People don't realize it was forced. Yeah, it was
done. I think I'm going to do one.
Get rid of. I think it was Senior, the British guy who commented about the Irish famine. He says he was disappointed that only 2 million people were dying. So that was their attitude.
Disgusting.
And all that surplus labor goes to the United States.
Another figure to look up. The real butcher of Ireland, way before the potato famines. I'm talking about like in the 1580s.
Oh, like Cromwell?
Ralph Lane.
Okay.
Look that guy up. He is one of the worst people in history. And no one says Ralph Lane when they'll say Hitler or Stalin. Yeah. Ralph Lane. He butchered Ireland, then he came over and he butchered Native Americans too.
Or the Bengal famine, 1943, or you know, under the British rule, where the British agriculture. I mean, you know, I think you've talked about this before, how the you know the opium crop disrupted agriculture in the. And that caused these periodic, you know, famines.
Opium and indigo. That's where they forced them to grow.
These are cash crops as opposed to like crops people could use. Because they wonder
that was happening in the early American colonies, like when Bacon's Rebellion happened for the tobacco farms. They wanted to grow food. They're actually importing food and exporting tobacco.
Yep.
I mean, they could grow the food instead. But it had to be the cash crop. But Bacon didn't care. All he was doing was attacking other poor people so that he could sell his own for more money. So
you did a very short video on other Holocausts.
Yeah.
Which probably warrants a longer video or perhaps even another interview.
the one I did on that got like 300,000 views or something like that. So it's a topic I should probably revisit.
Yeah, because I thought it was like 15 minutes or something. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Yeah, just the other things that have occurred that don't get quite the attention as some other.
A lot of interesting little stories in history and in recent times that, why aren't these Holocausts?
Mm-hmm.
What happened here? But we'll have to do it another time because I got to roll.
I know. It's late there.
I appreciate you watching the Trump's Sinus Ball and Chain.
No, it's,
or God is not a real estate agent is the kind of subtitle there.
I do highly recommend it, of course. Just, you can go there to Patreon and get access to it.
Get access to it on Patreon. If you don't want to pay every month, then you can go to Vimeo On Demand, and I'll give you the link so you can put it in the description. And Vimeo On Demand will let you rent the movie, watch it as many times as you want.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can buy it, whichever. It's $9.11. And there's a coupon code. You just write taxation is theft without spaces, and it'll give you a dollar off.
Oh, there you go. Okay, great.
It's only for like the next 30 people or something, but
okay,
you should be good.
Okay, well, I'm going to let you hit the sack now. I know it's late over there in Japan.
I always like these conversations. Yeah. I don't mind talking about segues either. I think that's all good. It's all part of the conversation.
Yes, because these things are all connected.
That's why I make these documentaries, because it kind of spurs thought about whether it's World War II or even the Civil War or whatever. You see this pattern. And this is what we have to break, folks, is to look, clean up the Port Authority. Just hold them responsible. Cut off foreign aid and clean up the PA. All it takes is sunshine. You know, they whine and we don't, and that's why they get their way and we're left in the dark.
Yep.
It's that simple.
Cut off the subsidy and make them find honest work if they're
able. Make them get a real job.
Yeah. Make them sweat a little bit.
Jared Kushner should be a Walmart greeter. I mean, guy, he went to Harvard because they paid for it, but he's an idiot. Like, he's Donald Rumsfeld level stupid.
He's jet-setting, like, meeting with foreign supposed dignitaries and negotiating U.S. foreign policy. He's like a little kid.
He's somewhere between like Douglas Fife and a brick on the side of the road.
Yeah.
So that's like slightly above Douglas Fife, slightly below the brick.
Yeah. And he's the son of a billionaire crook.
The son of a billionaire. And they're not clever. Like, you listen to these people speak. Even Donald Trump is mediocre at best. You know, he's not super intelligent or anything. Mm-hmm. He just has money.
Yep.
It takes money to make money. Mm-hmm. Make more of it. That's that.
So. Okay, Ryan, I'll let you go. Great talk. I want to thank you again for spending so much time with me. I will probably post this in a couple days, and when I do, I will send you the link.
Awesome.
Great.
Thanks again.
Good night. Bye-bye. Good day. Bye-bye.
If I were a carpenter and you were a lady, would you marry me anyway? Would you have my baby? If a tinker were my trade, would you still find me carrying the pots I made and following behind me? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Save my love through loneliness. Save my love through sorrows. I've given you my loneliness. Give me your tomorrow. If I work my hands in wood, would you still love me? Handsome me, babe, yes I would. I would put you above me. If I were a miller at a mill wheel grinding, would you miss your color box? Little girl, you're soft, sweet shoe shining. If I were a carpenter and you were a lady, would you marry me anyway? Would you have my baby? Would you marry me anyway and have my baby?